Hello and welcome to Minor Rex. I'm Charlie, and today I'm joined by Ariana and Joel and Lydia, and today we're going to be talking about horror films. It's just around Halloween time. If you're anything like me, your viewing habits might start getting a little spooky. We have a lot of different horror films in our collection, both online and in the library, and today we all watched a film called Tucker and Dale vs. Evil, and that's available to stream on both Canopy and Hoopla, two services that are available free from the library for streaming needs, and we also have the DVD in our collection. So, what'd y'all think of Tucker and Dale versus Evil?
I really liked it. I thought it was very funny, and I like horror where there's an unusual take on it, and that was definitely this, since it definitely had a lot of like horror themes and tropes in there, but then it kind of turned it around and made you think, like when you first see them in the beginning, Tucker and Dale seem evil, and then it's the kids who are on their vacation that seem evil, and it was just nice and refreshing to see a different take on horror and all the horror tropes that I grew up loving.
Yeah, the film does sort of presuppose that you've seen a couple horror films. You know, a lot of the cliches that appear in a lot of different horror films. You know, there's so many films that are just, there's a psychopath in the woods, and then the innocent college kids are up against it. And this turns it on its head very interestingly. And I would say that the more you have seen horror films and the more you can recognize those sort of cliches and tropes and character types, the more you'll get something out of this film and find it a good twist.
Yeah, it made me realize that a lot of horror film watching is waiting for different facets to appear. And it's almost like representational. And this really highlighted the fact that you were expecting this, and it's actually providing a whole new story behind this veneer of normal horror happenings. But, you know, really there's a whole comedy movie happening on the other side of the events. And I thought that was a brilliant take, you know, and it had some, it was almost the best of both worlds, because if there was a hole in the story, you know, like the day suddenly becoming, you know, night becoming day again, and just, it was also part of like the weird timelines of some horror films. So, you know, it's daylight when they want it to be, it's darkness when they want it to be. There's a random sawmill that
Chekhov's sawmill
that they end up at, and it's just, it was not kind of referenced at all. Just whatever they needed was there in the woods. Much like any horror film. So I thought even that, like, they were poking fun at the genre.
I think what was interesting about it, too, is it's still categorized as horror, but it wasn't scary at all. When I lived with roommates and then my boyfriend, they hate horror movies. So, like, whenever I watch, and I hate watching horror movies by myself, so it's very hard to come by them for myself, even though I try to keep up with them as much as I can. But this was one I was able to get my boyfriend to watch with me. And at the end, he said that wasn't scary at all.
Yeah. The things that happen to people are their own fault, or Chekhov's wood chipper, or are so silly that they're not terrifying. And there's, I think, not a single jump scare. Correct me if I'm wrong, but not much on the creeping dread either, because it's too funny.
Yeah, that's a good point, that it is, because it's so sort of cartoony, it takes some of the adrenaline fear out of it. And I actually, while I was looking up information about the movie, I found out that there's a name for this genre. It's splatstick. Obviously,
that's
awful. A neologism between slapstick and splatter horror. Now that I think about it, there's a lot of different films that sort of follow that role, like all of the trauma films. You know, a lot of you probably know Toxic Avenger as being this cheesy cult horror movie from the 80s that's a lot more funny than it is scary in any way. But I don't know. I kind of like the horror comedy more than I like straight horror because I'm kind of picky about my horror choices in general. Like, I don't like super gory splatter films, the, you know, the so-called torture porn. I don't like remakes and reboots. I think those are pretty much always a waste of time. I don't like when filmmakers confuse sound design for scary. Like, I know you've all seen horror movies, usually in the theaters, where like the first 10, 15 minutes are conversational and kind of quiet and lulls you into the false sense of security. And then 15 minutes in, everything raises by 10 decibels. And then suddenly there's screaming and gunshots and explosions and tense music. And it's like, yeah, I jumped, but I'm not scared. It's just a physiological reaction to loud sound. It's cheap. It's cheating.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm hard to please, I guess you would say, when it comes to horror films. So horror comedy is my jam for that reason. Like, either films that are really dumb and not scary but unintentionally funny, like the So Bad They're Good, and films that seem like they're dumb but are actually much more clever than they let on. And I think that Tucker and Dale versus Evil is sort of an example of the hidden smart dumb comedy.
I feel like horror has had a resurgence recently as well. It's like really good horror films. So I'm the same way as you were. I'm kind of picky with my horror. Like, yeah. I don't love the Saw series. Mm-hmm. I don't love anything that's really gory and just jump scares. I'm not a big fan of. But things like It Follows, Cabin in the Woods, Midsommar, anything that's like a smart horror film where it's kind of making you question, or like when you're watching it and then you're getting more and more creeped out even though nothing's jumping out at you or nothing's grossing you out. Mm. It's the kind where it actually scares you to your core that I love.
Mm. Yeah.
Right, like unsettling. Mm-hmm. You know, the opening scene of Midsommar is, this says a lot for Midsommar, but it was one of the most haunting scenes of the whole movie. Mm-hmm. And that, like, set the stage and just kind of, like, filtered through your consciousness. It really, everything happened that happened in the film was seen through the lens of what happened in the very beginning. Mm-hmm.
So I have a question that's going to sound glib, but I kind of actually mean it, which is, why would I need to see Midsommar if I've already seen The Wicker Man?
Hmm.
I haven't seen Midsommar, but I have seen The Wicker Man, and I don't know how similar they are, but I've heard that they're quite.
I haven't seen Midsommar, but did you see the original Wicker Man or the sequel Wicker Man with Nicolas Cage?
I have not seen the Nicolas Cage Wicker Man.
I've only seen clips on YouTube.
Yes.
But I do love the original Wicker Man and have not seen Midsommar. So anyone who has seen Wicker Man and Midsommar, how do they compare? How do they contrast?
From what I remember of Wicker Man, Midsommar was, well, obviously it's an update of a similar but not necessarily the same type of movie. It is an update, different social situation, different character viewpoint. Midsommar, I think, went into more of, like as I mentioned before, there was some trauma at the beginning that the character is working through with some grief. And I don't know, Wicker Man kind of had more of a looking for someone type of, more resembled a detective story, whereas Midsommar, yeah, Midsommar was more of like a an introspection into someone's psyche. Hmm. Very more personal. And therefore, when you're emotionally raw like that, the rest of Midsommar is that much more exacerbating on the psyche, whereas The Wicker Man was more of like a reveal. Midsommar, you kind of like just boil in the stew of unease and quiet terror the whole time.
Cool. All right.
Yeah, that sounds good.
I thought it was really beautiful, Midsommar. Like, and ultimately, if you break it down, it's a love story. That's what I would think. I think it's a story about a relationship, but ultimately, from the beginning, you kind of know what's going to happen. It's just, I would recommend that movie purely for the beauty of it, and just because it was so thought out, and the director, from the get-go, like, with the images on the wall, with everything they did, like, there was so much foreshadowing, and you knew from the beginning basically what was going to happen. And so I just recommend it because I think it was a masterpiece of a movie.
But, and again, it turns horror on its head. Mm-hmm. Same with Tucker and Dale versus Evil, where Tucker and Dale versus Evil used comedy. Midsommar used like artistic imagery. You know, it banished the idea that horror has to happen in the darkness. Mm-hmm. You know, it can happen at anywhere, at any time. And, you know, the only thing needed to have horror is for a person to be there, you know. And it was a very original film. And I enjoy that. Like you were mentioning before about, you know, horror and being picky about horror films. I can't tell. I love ghost films. I love haunted houses. Mm-hmm. I remember watching Gothica with a friend of mine who was just almost strictly a horror-watching friend. You know, we didn't know each other very well, but when there's a horror movie, oh, she'd come over, we'd watch it. Mm-hmm. And I remember after finishing that film, there was a door in my apartment that had, I guess, a loose latch, and there was an air pressure change, and the door opened out of nowhere. And I literally leaped out of my seat, and I had my back against the opposing wall in one bound. And like, what the heck is going on? You know, but that's what I love about a horror film. Like that adrenaline, that after, that bathing afterwards, coursing through your veins. So that's the haunted horror. Like, that's what gets me going. But I can't tell you how many of those films start out with quiet major piano chords and a car pulling up in front of a house, and the mom says, okay, Johnny, you know, here's your box. Go choose your rooms, kids. You know, they're moving into the house. Like, I would say 87% of the films, if not higher, have that. So when you have a legitimate ghost movie without someone moving into a new house, I love that. I love the fact that they worked hard and came up with, what we call The Sixth Sense. Like, that to me was a fantastic film, because the revelation of these ghosts were great, like in the tape recorder of the kid being left on and the therapist leaving the room and you hear void. Like, to me, that's what creeps me out. And I love it. But at the same point with Tucker and Dale versus Evil, I love that someone went a step further and was able to take that, turn it on its head, and make a statement almost in the inverse of, you know, these college kids are the enemy or the true evil. Right. And the one-liners in this film, I thought, were like, they were like throwaway lines, but they were great, you know, like, oh, I got college kid blood on me. You know, okay, hold on, let me just drop this leg. You know, that kind of, you know, it was very reminiscent, and it wasn't as good as, but it was very reminiscent of You've Got Red on You from Shaun of the Dead, which, again, talking about smart horror, smart, dumb, you know, horror films,
right.
Comedies.
Yeah, and another film that sort of presupposes, you know, the rules of a zombie film. Mm-hmm. And so when they do imbue it with this humorous nonchalance, that's sort of my sweet spot, where it's, you know, I get it because I have seen this film before.
So talking about these films that kind of fill the void, or like with Tucker and Dale, how it's, you know, like these college kids go on a vacation and they're in the woods and they meet, you know, some townies and things happen. It's funny when you're watching something and then the slasher, the murderer is outside and the person in danger runs upstairs. And as a horror fan, I'm always like, don't run upstairs. Like, don't do that. Like, why would you do that? But if they didn't, I would be upset. Like, I look forward to knowing that these formulas are being met. Like, I like when they're turned on their head, but as horror fans, do you find that you still, like, for example, Joel, with your ghost movies and haunted houses, which I'm a fan of too, you look forward to them moving into a new house. You look forward to that first night where the lights go off and they're alone and then you hear the creaking. Like, if they didn't fill in that expectation for me, I would be very disappointed.
Yeah, there's always like a, oh, you didn't leave the thing on the counter last night? Well, then who did? You know, type of thing. Like the very minor scare at the beginning, you know, the...
But you love it, right?
Right, yeah. I mean, I would miss it if it wasn't there. You know, don't get me wrong. But I just enjoy movies that don't use that formula specifically. Mm-hmm. You know, even the best ones of that, like Insidious, that had a house moving in scene, I think, right?
And yeah.
Maybe more attached than any other genre. They use different facets to be able to, okay, this is a horror film. This is what you're going to get. You know, I mean, I guess maybe in comedy, a romantic comedy or an action film, you know, there's always the big explosion and the slow motion walk away kind of thing. But I don't know, I think horror is just very recognizable. And maybe it's more of a narrow band width of fans that they feel they have to cater towards. I don't know.
Maybe.
I could see that because I think with like romantic comedies, sometimes when I'm watching something, it's like, just give the audience what they want. And they do. They usually do. There's always that moment of tension. But at the end, they always give the audience what they want. But I think because horror fans are such a niche group, or maybe because they're so fanatic about it, it seems like it is very formulaic.
Yeah. People get that sort of Pavlovian reaction when they recognize that character isn't very well fleshed out. I bet he's first to die. And then he is. Oh, saw it.
Yeah.
I predicted that.
It's a sense of satisfaction.
Yeah.
It's like, obviously you saw it because it was very obvious.
Right.
Yeah. And that's what makes Cabin in the Woods so successful as a spoof. We've all seen it, right?
Yeah.
Okay. It follows the tropes. It builds the tropes within itself and then tells you exactly what it's doing and how it's doing it. And then it takes it all apart at the end in a really pleasing way.
Yeah. I love that breakdown at the end where just everything kind of goes out the window. But I do love in Cabin in the Woods when they first discover the basement And I remember the girl, the smart one, kind of saying, like, oh, we should go downstairs. And the brainy guy saying, oh, yeah. And the stoner guy saying, what? No. No, we shouldn't. And they're like, yeah, we shouldn't. He's like, oh, okay, you're right. And they just, like, continue to walk down there.
Let's split up, gang.
Yeah. Yeah.
Always works out. I think I have a little bit of, like, selective amnesia around horror films, where I won't remember details of films that I know I have seen and enjoyed. And I think that might be part of it, that there is this suspension of disbelief when you're sitting down to watch a horror movie. But for me, there's also just, I turn my brain off in a way.
I was just about to say, yeah.
You know, it fulfills the needs and goes down that formula list. And I'm satisfied by the end, but I can't really tell you what happened in a way. Maybe it's just I have terrible reading comprehension. Does anybody else have that sort of not remembering a horror movie after you watch it? I don't know where that comes from.
I think as I watch horror movies, like later on when I try to recall certain elements of them, I can't remember them.
Yeah.
I think in the moment, if I can't remember something from the horror film, it's usually because I was so scared mm-hmm. that I think I temporarily blocked it out. But usually I remember it because I feel like when I'm so intensely involved in something, mm-hmm. which is what I am with horror, I usually tend to have trouble forgetting it.
I see.
Unless I black it out of sheer
yeah.
terror.
I mean, it could be that if it is sort of a subpar horror movie where you don't really get to know the characters and you just sort of fill in what they are. This is the smart one. This is the crafty one. This is the one who's got a plan. You don't really see them as individual or unique. You just sort of lump them in with that character archetype. Or maybe that's just how I see it.
So many of them are so similar, too. Like, I think of, like, Jeepers Creepers or Cabin Fever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Those kind of mold together. I can't remember them at all.
Given that Gothica experience, I couldn't tell you the first. Maybe Halle Berry was in that, but beyond that, I don't remember much about the film, but I do remember my reaction to the film. Mm. So I think it is. Your brain turns off. Your, you know, adrenaline centers turn on the valves, and it kind of blasts away consciousness. You enjoy the movie feeling, not, you know, intellectually.
Mm.
At least more so than maybe another movie.
That's a good point.
Or maybe you remember the big reveal. Like, I remember the big reveal in Gothica. And I remember.
See, I don't. So,
oh, you don't remember that at all?
Don't see, that's the thing.
Well, there's always a big reveal. I feel like saying a big reveal is
well, it
not.
Depends how big it is. You know,
oh, well, okay.
The quality of the movie, right?
That's true.
It's, you'd be like, oh, I saw that coming. You
know. That's true. That's a good point.
But the other interesting thing about horror films is that they always have, predominantly, there's usually a history, something that happened before. Hmm. You know, even back to looking at Scooby-Doo. My daughter watches a ton of Scooby, and I love it. I love Scooby-Doo. One, because they can do the same show over and over and over, and we always want to watch it. You know, it doesn't matter if it's old man so-and-so or Uncle so-and-so or somebody so-and-so. It's just the same
character.
This could
be the time that those meddling kids didn't catch up with the bad guy.
Right. Like, they never just grab somebody's, like, the monster's mask to begin with. You know, they always run away from them at first. Anyway, but the point is that there's always, like, even in Tucker and Dale versus Evil, there's the, they're making fun of it. Like, you know, 20 years ago, this very night, this mm-hmm. happened, and there's often, and I'm reading a book right now that focuses on, it's fiction by Stephen Graham Jones, My Heart is a Chainsaw, that focuses on a character who sees her life through a slasher film. She's a huge fan of slasher films, and everything is like, oh, this is that, this is this. But she does focus on the fact that every slasher film is about revenge.
Hmm.
You know, the slasher is not entirely a bad guy because it's always a wronged individual. At one point in the book, they even talk about Jaws being a slasher film.
Hmm.
You know, perhaps Jaws was an irradiated shark at the USS Indianapolis. And, you know, that's going way out there. But there's always like an introspection of consequences with horror films.
Hmm.
You know, it's almost like it preys on people's guilty consciences that you too could be a horror victim for possibly what you've done in the past. You know, I know what you did last summer.
Right.
You know, like, I thought that's an interesting part of horror films.
Yeah. I've been sitting here trying to remember the differences between Halloween, Nightmare on Elm Street, and Friday the 13th, based on what Ariana was saying. And those are, at least two of those are about wronged or people with histories of having been hurt or something. And I can't remember what Freddy Krueger's problem is.
He was burned by parents in a house.
There we go.
So
they've all got a backstory. Yeah.
Yep.
And I guess that also sort of makes the plot less nihilistic. Like, it's not violence for no reason, as it is in maybe Saw, a film like that. I don't know if Saw has a backstory. I haven't seen it.
But, I haven't either.
No, I haven't either.
But yeah, I think that people generally want to have something explained to them. And if it's just kind of random, gratuitous violence, it gets a little old.
Mm-hmm.
When you do sort of say, oh no, this isn't a monster, this is someone who's misunderstood, it's kind of a cliche now, but it fills in that gap of your understanding and sort of explicates the senseless murder.
And causes, you know, emotional investment to a point.
Is there a motivation in the birds, or is this an exception to that rule?
Mm.
It's been a long time since I've seen it.
Yeah, do the birds have a backstory?
Or are they just scary because we don't know why?
Mm.
Sometimes I feel like that's the epitome of mass horror. So I never saw the birds, but I think if there is no rhyme or reason to it, I think it can't be every horror film. There can be no rhyme or reason. But I think it has to be few and far between, but when they happen, it's just awful. I mean, good for us horror fans, but awful because it's terrifying. But like with The Ring, did you guys see The Ring?
Mm-hmm.
Like I remember it almost seems like a mystery, and then not to give anything away, but you kind of think there's more to it, and then I don't want to give anything away or spoil anything. It's been years, but like when you kind of find out in some aspects for something there is no rhyme or reason, I remember just flipping out. I remember just thinking, why did I watch this movie and where do I go from here?
Right. I remember watching that. Was it that? How many days was it?
7 days.
7 days. I remember like paying attention. Like, okay, it's been a week since I saw The Ring and what's going to go on? Yeah, my imagination is getting better in me a bit.
Well, I remember when I thought there was a conclusion, I remember heaving a sigh of relief, and then something else happened that turned it all.
Comes back for one last scare?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I don't remember this at all either, so I have to, man.
Well, I remember because I loved that film. I remember seeing it in theaters 5 times, and I remember watching it many times, like on TV at home as well.
I got that reaction from The Grudge. A lot of people laughed at that film, but there's something very unsettling about that. And again, The Grudge, I mean, that's, you know, they have it right in the title.
Mm.
You know, this is something that happened, and this is residual negative emotions coming back to haunt. There was no, I think that's what might be what it was. I couldn't explain why I couldn't pigeonhole where the horror came from.
I think that was similar. I think they were similar in a lot of ways. So like where you were saying, like Nightmare on Elm Street, Friday the 13th, and Halloween were all similar. The Grudge and The Ring would be two similar movies as well.
I've only seen trailers for The Grudge, but I know it has very pale children. That's all I know.
And going back to source of horror and purpose behind it, there's a movie, again, a smart, dumb comedy horror, Dead Snow.
Hmm.
It was Nazi soldiers basically turned into zombies. And I remember being very impressed by the film when they showed a climactic scene in the trailer and they had zombies charging against people across a field and the Ode to Joy from Beethoven. It was just such a great combination. And then the film happened. The Ode to Joy was nowhere in the film at all.
That's so sad.
It was. But it was still a decent film. And then it really got me thinking, you know, there's so many zombie films about Nazi zombies. Like there's Zombie Lake and Oasis of the Zombies. We have all these movies, by the way, on DVD. That there's a definite statement being made that the National Socialist Movement turned people into zombies.
Hmm.
Then the question arises, like, are they responsible for their own decisions? Or are they responsible, like, is the party of the Nazi party, are they brainwashing everybody? Because there's also movies that are non-horror, very dramatic films about people who are facing and owning up to the guilt of being in Germany during World War II. They're just as soul-searching and compelling, probably more soul-searching and compelling than a zombie film. But those are the statements that are being made.
Yeah.
That's the purpose of the film, is societal commentary.
Yeah, satirical horror is sort of an interesting thing because sometimes it's pretty unsubtle. But every once in a while, you get a pretty airtight satire of something in an unexpected source. Like, has anyone seen the film The Stuff?
No.
I think we have it on DVD and possibly Hoopla as well. But it's a pretty simple premise, a premise that might be familiar to you if you've ever seen The Blob. An unknown, mysterious alien substance is discovered, and then they discover that it's delicious. And so a junk food company markets it like ice cream, and everyone loves it. But of course, it's addictive, and it's alive, and it's turning people into zombies. So the FBI gets involved after complaints from rival junk food manufacturers. But, you know, it's actually a pretty clever satire of commercialism, consumerism, capitalist culture. Like, it's less stupid than I imagined it would be going into it.
Sounds a little bit like Poplars from Futurama. Mm.
Yeah.
With zombies.
Right. I always enjoy when it doesn't insult your intelligence when you're expecting it to. Because sometimes you can just tell that you're going to get ripped off. Usually if there's a pun in the title that explains the plot of the movie, like Thanksgiving, or Zombievers, or Poultrygeist.
Yep.
Like, you can tell that those were just made from the title up.
Have you watched a lot of those pun titles?
Every once in a while, I think, you know, it's just between Halloween and Thanksgiving. Yeah, I'll watch Thanksgiving, and it's terrible. It's just not good.
So, Lydia, you're not a fan of horror.
Not usually.
So I'm just wondering why or what about it don't you like?
A lot of it, and I do like some of them. I don't enjoy the adrenaline. I don't enjoy the jump scares, and I don't enjoy the Hitchcockian slashery torture the women thing. It's just not my bag. So, like, Rosemary's Baby, The Exorcist, Psycho, any slasher, it's kind of gross for me. I'm glad that they're well enjoyed and there's a lot to them that's cool, but they're not my bag.
Yeah, I can see that. I think, like you said, they're just kind of gross and they're very gory and it's not painting women in the best way.
Sure. It's less the gore. It's more the punishment of things which are nice for the sake of itself. Not to be a total downer. So sorry.
To counterbalance watching Tucker and Dale versus Evil, I watched a legitimate, because I think Tucker and Dale versus Evil is a very legitimate movie. I'm talking about legitimate horror film.
More of a straight horror.
Straight horror film. Thank you, Olivia. The one that I have not seen and that is a classic, a modern classic, and that has new resonance now after the pandemic, was I watched 28 Days Later with Cillian Murphy and Brendan Gleeson, I believe. Mm. But it is a film of a pandemic ravages the world and turns people into zombies. And it was kind of alarming watching that, you know, life come to a standstill in that way versus the way it did for obviously in reality. But I think that was more of a statement about treatment of other people and the contagiousness of ill behavior, which, again, is appropriate for our age. Mm-hmm. So what I'm getting at is the fact that I enjoy a film that makes you think about things, but with a horror film, it takes you out further. It leads you way far away from a realistic common sense narrative, and the travel out and then back takes a lot of talent, I think, to be able to string you out to the very edge and then to have you recognize real life interstitched into those moments where it's like a broad spectrum of emotions and feelings when you're watching this film, of images and ideas. I enjoy the journey to the edge and back.
Yeah, me too. When it's done well and, you know, done intelligently. But I think that, Lydia, you're definitely spot on that there's a lot of just yucky behavior in a lot of horror movies, whereas specifically 80s and 90s horror films, it seems like there was a very sort of lowest common denominator. Like, we're making these movies for teenagers, so they have to have nudity. They have to have gratuitous violence. You know, sometimes there's racist jokes. Sometimes there's things that aren't okay. Arguably never were okay, but we're more attuned to punching down in media. There's a lot of horror movies that I've turned off about halfway through it once I realized that, oh, this isn't made for me. This is made for a 13-year-old boy. And just because there's so much horror, that means there's so much bad horror. Yeah. And because there are people who like extremely low budget and kind of cheesy horror movies, in some ways I think that may have lowered the bar to some extent on like straight-to-DVD, zero-budget horror films where anyone can make them.
We're looking at you, Velocipastor. Which we have on DVD.
Do you seek out the pun titles just to do an order of them every year to make sure we have sufficient pun titles on the shelf?
A deep, dark secret of mine as a DVD selector, yes.
Beautiful.
If I like the pun, I'll order the movie.
That's
what happened with Velocipastor. And to read that it was a pastor who turns into a dinosaur, great. Maybe that has a commentary on current religious happenings. I don't know. I have not seen it.
Sometimes I wonder if they seek out to make a greater statement in some of these B movies, but then they just miss the mark because they know people are going to watch it anyway. Like, I remember going to a movie store, like when that was a thing, and renting a few movies, and one of them was a movie called The Convent, and we thought it was The Covenant. Like, I had grabbed it, not totally reading the title. So we watched the majority of it, and after a while, I was like, this is not the same movie as what I thought it was. But we watched it, and it was horrible. And we watched it the whole way through, and it was probably there for a reason, because people are going to keep checking it out. And I think they're trying to make a statement about religion and horror and the thin blurring line sometimes, but they did it horribly. It was so bad.
A horrible horror movie?
Yeah. Many.
So, but the thing about horror is that you can deconstruct anything. Mm. You know, the rules are off.
Often deconstructing people.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And I think that, like, they took that as a genre, and they're like, wait a second, we can do this? We can, you know, and I'm thinking all the way back to the 1930s with Dracula and Frankenstein, the Mummy, and then later on in the 40s with Wolfman. They're like, these are stories that, like, we can go outside the bounds of reality. And then, like, of course, coming up to the 80s and 90s you were referencing earlier, that just got to a fever pitch of, like, let's just, it was very gratuitous and, like, we're trying to one-up each other, you know. Like, how many Halloweens have come out now?
Mm-hmm.
But as times have changed, you've seen characters get written differently. You know, Laurie Strode's character is now, I mean, it always has been. Her character has always been empowered and resistant and in charge and... Even so in the modern Halloween films, but it's just that I think the more that they got carried away with deconstructing reality and people, it's almost like the misogyny of the time got caught up in that. This is a great point.
I'm reading a book right now, and I'm not that far into it, but it's called The Final Girls Support Group. And the concept of it is it's all these final girls. So the girls who have survived a slasher or like some awful disaster, you know, like Jamie Lee Curtis from the Halloween films or the girl who survived from the Jason films or something like that. So they all meet for this support group. And then after that, you kind of follow their path as they try to get home. Like one girl, it takes her 3 hours to get home, even though this support group is pretty close to her house because she doesn't want to see the same person coming back on the bus or she doesn't want them to have any clue of where she's going. So she'll try to redirect anyone. So you kind of see the turmoil of what these girls have gone through, but then also it talks about how these girls are essentially celebrities. So how people are so obsessed with them, they kind of remove them from the situation at hand. So it's like you don't think about them as humans or like how you actually can empathize with them.
Yeah, in the Stephen Graham Jones book I'm reading, the final girl is identified by the character, like, oh no, you can't harm her, she's the final girl. Everything and all of her actions take place in there. She's pushing everything towards the final girl for her to, like, prepping her to be. And there's really no individuality there. It's more of like a pedestal environment. And I think Riley Sager, he has a book out about a final girl as well. So, like, there's a rash of final girl novels.
Interesting.
Buffeting the waves of fiction.
And do you think that's just more people are conversant or fluent in the rules of horror, that they can sort of take this, what used to be just a thing that nerds on message boards knew about, and kind of turn it into a social comment?
I think that the focus is less on the villain and more on the empowerment of the victim.
Right. And, you know, it speaks to survival. And another word for a horror movie could be a trauma movie. Mm-hmm. And I would imagine anyone who survives the events of any horror movie you can name, they've probably got major PTSD. And thinking about horror movies in a realistic context makes you think about, like, the consequences of a plot that you might think as totally outlandish.
Well, I think horror has a little bit more credibility than it once did as well. Like, I think about all those, you know, horror geeks on the message boards are now kind of showing their face, or they're doing things with it. Like, I think of like Jordan Peele with Get Out, and how Get Out, it was up for an Oscar, wasn't it? Like, that's such a smart horror movie. And I think people who are fans of horror seeing it, like the fact that that was up for an Oscar when it would have, like, a horror movie would never be nominated for an Oscar.
Yeah. Like, or Parasite.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't know if Parasite qualifies as a straight-up horror film, but it's definitely suspenseful and...
It had horrific elements.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The horrors of class rather than the horrors of zombies, which are also about class. So there we are.
Yeah, some more social commentary under the edifice of horror.
Yeah, I think the VHS and the video store level of horror was more of like society against the villain. But then now in fiction and in movies, it's more of the victim against society. And it's representing how society is. There are immutable structures within society that are causing horrific life patterns for these people. And the horror is a way of accentuating that. And how can they break free from those, you know, against racism or against misogyny?
So I know I said earlier that I hate sequels and reboots and remakes, and I think they're usually a waste of time. Are there any that are worth my while? Because there's so much opportunity to remake old premises, but with today's sensibilities. But every time I see it done, I just think, you didn't add anything to Carrie. You just gave the kids cell phones.
Have you seen the remake of Fright Night?
No.
Okay. It might be an exception.
Okay.
Just because the original was so campy, and the remake, not sequel, has definitely more money behind it, and also more talent on the acting side. It's got David Tennant, it's got Anton Yelchin, and it's got Colin...
No,
the other one.
Farrell.
Thank you. Colin Firth. Very much not Colin Firth. But it is delightful to watch because of the performances, not just because of how silly it is. And it's very silly. Mm-hmm. It's extremely silly. But that might be an exception to your rule there, which we do have on DVD, by the way.
I mean, I just heard that they are doing a big-budget Hollywood version of The Toxic Avenger, which at first I thought that is an awful idea. The point of that movie is that it was made for no money and that it's just kind of badly made. But then I read that Peter Dinklage is going to be the Toxic Avenger, and I'm like, actually, that's amazing. That's great. I need to see this. And actually, that's part of what I respect Tucker and Dale versus Evil for, that it didn't devalue its franchise by making it into a franchise. Mm. They actually did have an idea for a sequel to it, Tucker and Dale Go to Yale, the elevator pitch for which was Good Will Hunting meets Texas Chainsaw Massacre, which also sounds great, but apparently they wrote a script and the script wasn't very good, so they didn't make it. And I respect the heck out of them for that.
Yeah.
You know, if you don't have a viable reason to make a sequel, don't make a sequel. Even if the original made money, even if fans are dying for it, even if the original cast has signed on, if you don't have a good idea, don't make a movie.
Yeah.
Speaking of, it's not exactly a remake, more of an homage, but has anyone in this room seen Evil Dead the Musical?
Hmm.
About 10 years ago, somebody made a thing, which is beat for beat, Evil Dead the Musical. Don't know how they got the rights to it, but it does involve gallons of blood and a singing moose head and a tango number called What the F Was That? It's delightful, and if you can ever catch it, you should. But it sticks to the plot of Evil Dead, which is also the plot of Tucker and Dale. And so I've had some songs from that stuck in my head for the last few days as I've watched Tucker and Dale.
I will have to check that out, because the Evil Dead trilogy is one of my favorite examples of the horror comedy genre. I guess the first one is sort of a straight horror movie, but by the time you get to Army of Darkness, it's reached Monty Python levels of silliness. And so a musical would take it even further. And I know there's also a Toxic Avenger musical, which I have not seen, but which sounds equally appealing.
Well, did it start with... the Evil Dead musical came out after Little Shop of Horrors.
Very much so.
Okay. Little Shop of Horrors was kind of a cult classic, and then they remade it into a musical.
Yeah.
And the musical, people say, is much... I like the original a lot, personally, but the musical was very good as well. People say that's better than the original.
So I only know of it through the stage version. Is the original movie not a musical?
No, it's not.
Oh, wild.
Yeah.
Sort of like a black and white stage play, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And Jack Nicholson was in it.
Oh, yeah. Very young.
It was like
one of
his first roles.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. I thought it was very good. We ended up watching it because it was on one of the free streaming channels, and we watched it, my friend and my boyfriend. And then it was at first I was kind of like, what are we watching? Why are we watching this? And then we sat and watched the whole thing and ended up loving it. And so the next time we all hung out, the three of us, we watched the musical of it, which was also very good. But I think we ended up loving the original so much, which was not a musical, which is just a straight. I mean, I looked up what it said as the genre, and I guess it called it Jewish horror comedy. So they had like a lot of Jewish jokes in there, which I thought was interesting. But yeah, I think that was one of the first ones that kind of made a horror musical.
Hmm. We have that. Little Shop of Horrors. It is part of a double feature hosted by Elvira.
Excellent.
On DVD. So,
I think she just wrote a book, so she's been doing promotional interviews.
There's a lot of Elvira news out right now. It's fascinating.
Is Young Frankenstein a horror film?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Now, I was going to say, we can't leave this conversation talking Tucker and Dale versus Evil and Shaun of the Dead. I mean, Young Frankenstein is one of the... It belongs in that arc. Hmm. If you have not seen Young Frankenstein,
and
you have any... Well, Baron von Frankenstein. And every single year, my wife, who she loves it so much, she's like, you think the kids are old enough to watch it now? And I'm like, our kids are 12 and 10. I'm like, maybe, maybe not. Because there's some humor that might be a little bit not of kid humor. You know, and we did dress up as I was Baron von Frankenstein for Halloween a few years ago, and she was Terry Garr's character.
Yeah, are there any other, what my folks call, drop-in watches? Anytime it's on TV or nearby, you just have to watch it? Like, are there any horror films that it's not Halloween without?
That would be it for me.
Just Young Frankenstein?
Like, every single year we watch Young Frankenstein.
Nice.
We own the DVD, which is... more of a statement now than it ever has been.
I can't think of anywhere it's like I have to watch it every Halloween. But I have What We Do in the Shadows on DVD at home. And now anytime that I kind of see it chilling in my living room or stumble upon it, I have to put it in. I have to watch the whole thing.
You still haven't seen it yet, Joel, have you?
The movie, yes. The show, no.
Oh, okay. Charlie?
I would say Monkey Shines. Anytime I see Monkey Shines on TV, I'm like, I gotta watch that again. It's definitely one of those where the plot can be written on a cocktail napkin. There's a professor becomes a paraplegic and gets a helper monkey, and it's an evil helper monkey. And that's all you need to know. Have fun. It's been a couple years since I've seen it, but it's always, always a joy.
Do we own that, do you know?
I don't think we do, actually.
Okay. I'll look into that.
I think it's George Romero.
Oh, definitely. We need to get it.
Yeah.
One of my all-time favorite, and it's probably one of my most quoted movies of all time, is The Burbs with Tom Hanks and Carrie Fisher and Bruce Dern and Corey Feldman. And I watched it when I did not live in the suburbs for the first time, and I loved it. And now that I live in the suburbs, it makes me laugh that much more. But I would classify it as horror. It has a horrific twist.
Okay.
And it is such a corny... yet accessible movie full of comedic quotes that, you know, again, the plot's not super hard. You're wondering whether your neighbors are evil or not. I mean, who hasn't, you know?
Yeah.
Like, in many cases, it's dashed away immediately. But in some cases, you're like, I don't know about those people over there. I enjoy it. Like, whenever that's on or I see it available, I watch it.
I don't know if I'm ever going to rewatch Annihilation, but I think about it a lot every year. Mm. And have any of you seen that one?
I haven't, no.
It's more of a nuclear thing. It's not so much there's not like creeping, coming to get you horror. Explorers go to this place on the Gulf Coast of the U.S., and everything's weird and horrible and alive in unexpected ways and corrupted in unexpected ways. And it's a horror of unmaking yourself.
Hmm.
And I don't want to say any more because none of you have seen it, but it's quite fun.
It's intriguing. I will put it on my to-watch list.
It's Lovecraftian, but without quite so much bigotry.
The Blair Witch Project used to be one for me because I really enjoyed it So I remember the first time I saw it on our DVD player and I fell asleep. And then I remember the second time I saw it, I was terrified. I remember just being riveted the whole time. And because I think it's that I knew what was going to happen, but because so much of it is kind of waiting to see what happened, I think that suspense, even though I don't think there's a lot of jump thrills or anything like that, but that suspense of just waiting for that is what scared me so much. And then I remember every time, like most Halloweens, I would have to watch it. And then my dad was obsessed with it too, because I remember one Halloween, he wanted us to decorate our house with a bunch of twigs to make it look like the Blair Witch came, and we had tied them together. And it was supposed to look really cool, but it just looked like a bunch of haphazardly tied twigs together in our front yard.
Bringing it back to the Wicker Man.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Yeah, I would say the Blair Witch, for me, I saw that 4 times in the theater, so I would say same for that one. It was very, to me, I thought it was original. Mm-hmm. I'm always a sucker also for movies that reflect on, and Annihilation is like the maximum of this, but like, just like, what's in the woods? Mm. What's out there? What's in there? It's almost like a creature feature, but at the same point, the unknown and, you know, what it says about our reaction to it, what does it say about us? Mm.
And yeah, it's very easy in those films to sort of put your own circumstances into them and, you know, spook yourself out. Mm-hmm. So if it's a film about something's crazy in the crawl space, then you'll get suspicious of the crawl space.
I grew up surrounded by woods. Mm. And many times at the end of the day when it's just like you're playing outside, I remember as a kid, I came inside when it got to be that dark enough where my imagination started spilling over the borders of my rationality. And I could imagine like Sasquatch like staring out at me through from the woods and like, okay, time to go in, you know. And now when I watch these films, I kind of tap into that momentary panic of picking up everything and going in the house.
Yeah.
Speaking of all this, Stranger Things. We haven't talked about Stranger Things yet. And it does the thing you were talking about earlier where it brings the horror to you. Like the unless I'm much mistaken, the house where the thing comes through the walls isn't haunted. It doesn't have history, right?
Right. It's just a breakthrough from, what is it, the upside down?
Yeah.
The lab, which is nearby, but it's not going to a place where there then is horror. The horror comes to you.
Yeah.
I think it does that really effectively.
Yeah, the scenes where Winona Ryder is communicating, that was very effectively scaring me. Yeah.
I remember her having the lights and the alphabet in their living room, kind of in the back. And so I think of visually with a horror film, even with 28 Days Later, like I remember what was so striking was the visuals where you can see yourself actually being in that scenario, but it's almost very sparse. So that's kind of what it was with Winona's living room. Mm-hmm. And then same with in 28 Days Later when he was walking the street.
Yeah.
I remember just thinking, whoa, because like, you could see it happening, even though it'd be in a whole different context.
Yeah, and in 28 Days Later, a lot of the horrible parts had no sound. Mm-hmm. It was very stealthy and sneaky and quiet, and I thought that was really effective. And the camera angles were, Danny Boyle did, I think, a terrific job with that film. Very easy to see his talent through that film.
I think they did that in Stranger Things really well, too, because I remember when they're in the Upside Down and you can just hear, like, the static of the Upside Down. Like, you don't, there's not much more sound, but you hear, like, the kind of whooshing of the different particles or them kind of walking through it.
It brings the uncanny to the woods in an awful way.
Yeah.
Never been so worried about a flickering light in my apartment before.
Do you think you have a new appreciation for horror, or do you still feel
like after this conversation?
Yeah.
Nah. Like, it's, I might see Midsommar. You've given it a glowing endorsement, all of you, but it's not really my thing.
I similarly feel like I like what I like. I've got more recommendations of things that I might like, but I don't think my tastes have changed. I still think I'll be kind of grumpy about sequels from here to eternity. A lot of the things that I don't like, I just don't like them for a reason.
I mean, I think sequels are oftentimes done very poorly. I don't know why they're done or why remakes are done, but I just don't feel like they deliver, maybe because of the like unoriginal content of it or just like the concept that it's already been done and it's hard to create something.
They're more reactionary.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah.
And I just feel like they're kind of cynical. They get made because enough people liked the first one, and they just don't have a great reason to do it independently. Like, there's not more story to tell. There's just demand for more story to be there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And people buy tickets.
Yeah. Well, as we've said throughout, a lot of these films you can find here on the third floor in our DVD section under horror, sometimes under sci-fi, sometimes under mystery, sometimes... But usually under horror. If you see the little Frankenstein logo, that means you're in the right place. And a lot more of them are available online through the streaming services Hoopla and Canopy. And yeah, turn off the lights, don't eat too much Halloween candy, and enjoy scaring yourself silly. All right, that has been Minor Rex, and thank you for listening.